Hello, PHCC. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 2 of PHCC Rocks, a podcast highlighting some of the great things happening all over America related to the National Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Contractors Association. I'm your host, Joel Long, and we are coming to you from today's international headquarters of PHCC and looking forward to having some great discussions in the upcoming weeks and months. We are doing this podcast because we believe in telling the incredible stories of our members, chapters, events, and partners from all over the country that make PHCC rock. Today, we are highlighting another great part of PHCC. We have Daryl Fuller with us. Daryl is the new president of the AEC, the Association Executives Council, and is the executive director of PHCC of Oregon. And Daryl is zooming in with us from, I think, from Salem today. Are you in Salem?
Kaiser.
It's Kaiser. Okay.
A community right next to Salem.
Okay, and we hear there's a snowstorm and all kind of crazy stuff going on. Is that right? Or
a rainstorm.
No, a rainstorm.
We're expected to get 2 inches of rain in the next day and a half.
Okay, so. See, we always have misconceptions about different parts of the country, and I'm assuming in, you know, November, if you're having a storm, there's like 12 feet of snow, and, you know, in North Carolina, yeah, we're still sitting around in our shorts and all that stuff, so yeah.
I would welcome the snow. I love to ski, so I'm all for it.
Well, Daryl, listen, really, really thrilled that you took the time today, and welcome to PHCC Rocks, and let's get right into it.
I think this is a great new venture at the national level. I appreciate and am honored to be invited to participate, so let's talk.
Yeah, you know, I think, and I know when I called you about doing this, you know, I believe that one of the strengths of the of the association is the relationship with the AEC, and so I'm really glad, and you being the second episode, with the first one being Mark and Gray, hopefully that'll set up how we really see the AEC and how important it is. And so the first question, we want to get into is, I love hearing stories in general about how people got where they are. You know, I love hearing some of the background, because in my world, we almost never end up where we think we're going a lot of times. So I just love hearing that. So can you tell us how you ended up? Do you talk about your background some and how you ended up at PHCC of Oregon?
Well, I'll do it in two parts. I'll tell you a little bit about my background, then I'll tell you a little bit about how I ended up with PHCC. Obviously, they're related. But I was born and raised in Oregon, so I've been here my whole life. I went to Willamette University, which is right across the street from our state capital. I've always been very interested in politics and public policy. I got my degree in political science, and I've spent most of my career as a lobbyist. That is primarily what I do.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, and the reality is, growing up, my parents always said, just make an honest living. That's all, do an honest day's work for an honest day's wage. My brother's a cop, and I went into politics, so you can imagine they're disappointed in me and happy with him.
Yeah, there you go.
I go visit them. They're retired in Klamath Falls, and they've got lots of questions about politics, but if they need help with plumbing, I'm just not their guy. It's a different industry. I bought them a new shower head a couple of years ago for Christmas, and my dad didn't even want to let me put the new shower head in. He wasn't sure that I could do it.
Perfect.
College kids, right? So I've spent most of my career in Oregon at the state capitol. One of my fraternity brothers at Willamette University, I'm a Sigma Chi, Kate is the lobbyist for the union plumbers here in Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And he approached me one day and said that the association representing plumbers was looking for a new exec and a new lobbyist. They were having some financial problems. We had an exec that embezzled a bunch of money from us about 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. They were thinking about just declaring bankruptcy and being done. And so my friend Brian Krieg, who represents 290, the union, said, would you be interested in taking these guys on? It was outside of my area of expertise. Most of what I do is in the auto industry.
Yeah.
And said, but they really could use some help. And so I sat down with their leadership and we cut a deal. And there wasn't a lot of money in the beginning. In fact, there were a couple occasions where I loaned the association money personally so that we could do payroll. I have a part-time employee that does does a little apprenticeship program that we have. And so I made sure she got payroll, and we're in much better shape now. But that was almost 10 years. This is, I think next year's my 10-year anniversary with the association.
Kidding. Wow, I didn't know
and,
that.
So we started out just seeing whether it would work or not. And they're my number one client. So
that's good. You know, the dedication to that story about loaning money. There's so many, when, as I talk to people, I know in North Carolina, we've done some things that, you know, lawyers or financial advisors would say, don't do that. But you do it because, you know, the love of what you see with other people and everything. So it's been really, really interesting with some of that that I've seen across the country. So, yeah, great. Appreciate that feedback. And it is interesting how did you end up here? And you never would have thought when you were a Sigma Chi that you were going to end up doing this. I guarantee.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and I still have five other clients that I do lobbying for. I still represent most of the auto industry at the Oregon legislature. I represent the septic system installers. I represent land surveyors. So the most of my business is still government relations. PHCC is the only client I have that I also manage their association.
Okay, well, great. Yeah, well, you know, that experience elsewhere really helps us too, I'm sure, on that side of it. So great. So listen, you know, I've talked, you know, I think anybody that knows me knows how much, how important I think it is all the small groups we have in PHCC and the big umbrella of PHCC. And that, because I believe that's how most of our people get really connected to the organization. You know, we you know, you being the current president of the AEC, the Association Executives Council, you know, it's the same thing. I think that that is such a vital role and makes up the whole of PHCC connecting that specific piece. But, you know, I'm sure I don't know enough about the AEC and what they do every day. And I'm sure a lot of our members don't. So talk about, you know, can you talk some more about the AEC, maybe some information, insights, and maybe talk about some mission, the mission work and that kind of stuff that you guys, how you guys see what your goals are.
Sure. Well, and I appreciate that opportunity. AEC essentially has two functions within the sort of the federation of PHCC nationally. One is that we are all of the state and local execs. There's, I think, over 100 different state affiliated state and local associations, whether it's Los Angeles or the greater New York area, then states have their associations. And so we are we're professionals. This is what we do for a living, is manage the associations. And so AEC is our opportunity for us to collectively learn from one another. You know, we adopt best practices. We talk about the problems that we're having at the state level. I know, for example, that if there's something happening at the Capitol in California that plumbers don't like, it's probably going to make it to Oregon at some point, right? Oregon tends to adopt whatever bad things they do in California. And the same thing with the state of Washington. If there's a harebrained idea on some regulation in the state of Washington, the regulators in Oregon can't wait to try it in our state as well. And so the AEC gives us an opportunity to find out what's happening in other states. There are best practices on membership, best practices on associates and how we interact. You know, what's the most effective way to encourage people to come to our golf tournament? So they're just all of that sort of professional communication. We're not competitors with each other, so we can be real honest about, you know, what's working and what's not working. So it's just a great opportunity for us to network as state and local execs with one another to benefit the membership as a whole. And then the other part of that is collectively we have a seat on the national board, which is what I do as president. I'm going to spend the next year working with you.
I'm sorry. I'll go ahead and apologize up front.
Well, I was going to do the same. I'm going to be the squeaky wheel for the next year.
Oh, I know. And, I've already heard. I'm just kidding. But, yeah. But no.
But you've already heard. I haven't even started.
I run my mouth. I'm like a lobbyist. I run my mouth too much. But yeah.
Well, I think we want to be, you know, as state execs, we're invested in this as much as the contractor members are, right? I mean, this is important to us as it is to all of you and everybody watching this podcast. And states are extremely diverse in their membership. States are extremely diverse in how they're regulated, how they're licensed or not licensed. So there's just a lot of information out there. And because we are in daily contact with our members and our boards, and so we have a sense of what's happening in our states. And my goal is just to bring that to the national board.
Yeah, perfect. You know, I heard a couple of things that I really want to piggyback on, I believe. You know, my experience is just the level of professionalism that the execs bring state by state really carries over, because, you know, you guys are always bringing in new volunteer leaders. And so you're really setting the example of what should be expected across the country. And then the other thing I see is, like, I know in North Carolina, I've been involved in two new executive directors in North Carolina, and without the partnership of other execs, you know, getting them to climb up the hill that we, that on how we want them to operate and the understanding and what really goes on in the connection with National, without having the other execs that had more experience, the journey would have been so long for them and it would have been so hard. And then they quickly develop relationships with other execs that help them overcome little battle, little skirmishes before they get big. And so really, I think it's just a great piece of that. And then, you know, I really believe the AEC and those execs are the glue that kind of keep us going. You know, they,
well, when the National Association did a search for a new national executive director, they found a state exec. Yeah. It wasn't with PACC.
That's right.
But Mark, our new CEO, comes from state executive association experience. Yeah. So when you guys were looking for the right guy, you reached down into the state association executive world.
Yeah, that's a great thing. And I think, you know, 5 years ago when we did our strategic planning and everything, one of the main keys was to us to continue to become a more member-centric organization, realizing that all the membership comes through the states. You know, it doesn't come through National. And so continuing to build those relationships. And the diversity you talked about state by state is amazing. I mean, you know, Oregon doesn't need what North Carolina needs. You know, we're constantly trying to make sure we're feeding the right information to the right states and opening up the doors. And that's what this is about in a lot of ways, is making sure we're listening. I like the listening tour concept where, you know, we're trying to understand better, because I'm amazed at the variety of what is needed across the country. And so that's great connection on that. Anything else on that?
Well, no, I was just going to say, when we get together and start talking about the five-year plan, the fact that almost all the membership comes through the state, I think is one of the topics that we need to discuss.
Yeah.
You know, that the National sets goals for us at the state level for membership, which is great. But I think that maybe we need to have a national strategy for membership. I think there are opportunities with social media and other ways where we can partner in a more effective way to grow our membership.
Yeah, and I think, I think you're dead on that, and I hear that a lot. And then, you know, figuring out what the connection point of that membership is state by state is how we do that in a lot of ways. So, yeah, we're excited about those opportunities, and we're definitely will be listening to the execs and the state presidents going into that and out of that that conversation for sure. So, you know, I it's got to be exciting you having a new role, right? The AEC president has all kind of perks, you know. Just kidding. Volunteer, you got to love volunteering for something like that, but it's really important, you know. And so I wanted to, you know, maybe get some feedback of how you guys feel coming out of Connect. You know, we were finally able to get back together. You know, give us some feedback on Connect and what you thought.
Well, I mean, Connect was the first time I traveled for business in almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I was just excited that you know, I could escape the surly bonds of COVID. You know, it's been a tough couple of years for all of us. We've all learned how to do social media. I've joked, but it's true. My wife had me buy a new couch. Because the center cushion of the couch at home had been permanently dented with me sitting for 8 to 10 hours from going from Zoom meeting to team meeting and back to Zoom meeting and not being able to see people and talk to people and shake hands. In fact, I, you know, when we went to Connect, I wore pants to a meeting for the first time in almost 2 years. So that was, you know, it was really interesting. I had to go buy new pants. So that actually fit now, which is kind of depressing.
But I'm not going to touch that.
So the state execs, we got together. I think we had almost 30 state or local execs at Connect. So we were excited to see that response. People are interested in getting out and talking again. And so just the opportunity for us to come together as state execs and get in a room and talk about how we survived the pandemic. Yeah. The fact that whether it's our member businesses, and most, you know, we were considered essential workers. Our members were essential workers. And I think that's an important thing for us to continue to emphasize. But I think all of us were worried about whether associations would survive and what would we do when we couldn't have in-person events, which we live off of, in terms of revenue. You know, in Oregon, our golf tournament is one of our biggest revenue creators for the association to survive, and we couldn't have a golf tournament. So those things are important sort of in the nuts and bolts of doing what we do for advocacy and member benefits. So we got together. We're excited with a new national CEO, the notion that we can get together and talk about ways to everybody had to throw their five-year strategic plan out the door when COVID hit.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Right? I mean, all of a sudden we're starting now. Now we have to sit down and say, okay, how do we get back and what does normal look like? Not only for our members, but what does normal look like for an association? How much of what we do going forward is going to be this online versus actually getting in person? And I detest video calls, and I detest for I like being, you know, I'm yeah, a lobbyist.
You and I did have a conversation about
it. I want to be, you know, most of what I do as a state lobbyist is walk down the hall with legislators.
Right.
And I can't do that now. Right. So,
well, you know, I was kind of stunned. I didn't know what to expect going into Connect. And, you know, the speech I had to give on that Friday night, I had already written it when I left. And then as the week went on, I completely changed it. And a lot of it was because of the buzz. You know, it was really an unexpected level of just excitement. I just wasn't sure what to expect, like you were talking about, and try to make different connections, because I really thought there was so much more energy, and just it was really an interesting week for me to see. And, you know, I've been to a lot over the years, but it was really good to see everybody just fired up, I think, to get back together. And I'm not sure it was everything we did. We did a tremendous amount of, you know, meetings. We had all these great events and everything, but I think you know, maybe half of it was just getting back together and getting out on the road, like you talked about. You know,
well, there was a lot of that. I love when I go to Connect. I always go and spend some time watching the apprentices competing. I mean, that's just a really exciting part of, and Oregon is looking at maybe for the first time. We were going to have our first competitors at Connect a year ago, and that didn't work out. And so we're excited about re-engaging with our JATCs, about sending some Oregon kids to Connect in the next year or two. I think that's a great, the trade show was tremendous. I picked up an American Plumbing Story hat while I was there. If people watching haven't had a chance to watch some of the American Plumbing Stories, you know, that's the kind of thing that we need to sort of work with. And get people jazzed about what our members do, because there's a lot of exciting stories out there. And we have the opportunity now through social media to tell stories in ways that we haven't before. I mean, Mike Rowe was a great thing, right, for the trades
when he started
his dirty jobs. And so we, you know, there seems to be a reality show about almost anything anymore. Right. And so we need to make sure we're taking our turn and we're telling our stories in ways that we haven't been able to tell in the past, just because the technology wasn't there. And now, whether it's American Plumbing Stories or some of the other things that are going on out there, we have a real opportunity to encourage young people to be involved in the trades and to present it in a way that's interesting and exciting and fun.
Yeah.
Where people can say, hey, this is, you know, this isn't the plumber that I thought. You know, this isn't the HVAC tech that I thought. This is actually really fun stuff and really interesting stuff.
Well, you know, the world's changing too. And I, you know, talking about the story changing, you know, I thought I had in my mind what the most exciting and best things coming out of Connect were going to be. But really the two things that I was surprised to know was the 91-year-old Mr. Lindsay from Virginia that won the contest, you know, I'm sorry, won the Contractor of the Year, and seeing that 91-year-old get up on stage. And, you know, when I talked to him, and I've said this a couple of times, he had more energy than he's got more energy than I do. And it was amazing to see that. And then, you know, having the air conditioning contest won by a female apprentice and what that means for our industry, I thought, in our association, and just the successes of those. So that tells an entire story coming out of COVID, that the pandemic, that I didn't think we'd see. So, yeah, it's exciting times.
Well, and we just recently had our first national president that was a woman as well, which was exciting. And what I hope to see in my lifetime, in our lifetimes, is where that's not news anymore. Well, that's not interesting anymore, that there are women involved in the trades, that we don't, you know, point to that and say, look at it, because it's just part of,
yeah,
that, you know, that, we're out there recruiting, trying to get more women and trying to create diversity, because it's good for the association. It's good for our contractors. It's good for our contractor members to go out and find those employees. But, you know, whether it's, again, whether it's American Plumbing Stories or whether it's some other thing, we need to figure out a way to get high school counselors that, you know, mandatory training on what it's like to be in the trades and the value that it can bring to students.
Yeah. And I think that is coming. I think it's already happening, where it's really about being successful first. And then, All those other things are just sidebars. And I mean, I know at our company, two of our technicians that are the best just happen to be female. And we have customers asking for them because they're good at what they do, not because they're females. It's an interesting dynamic. And there's a lot of pressure on some of the other guys to improve because of it, because it's really an interesting what it's turned into. So Connect was a success in your view, but it also, you know, kind of re-energized you, I hope, going forward as a group. But then, you know, you guys have the biggest, one of the biggest meetings of the year that nobody talks about a lot of time, which is Spectrum. And I'm not sure our members really, general members, understand how strong that meeting is and what, you know, what happens there. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, so Connect is the national meeting for the PHCC members, right? It's where we try to encourage the contractors to come out and talk about best practices and learn about the newer technologies in the industry. And it is built around our contractor members. Spectrum is an annual meeting of state execs, primarily state and local execs, where we get together. And as we talked about briefly earlier in our conversation, it's where we talk about best practices and what's happening in the associations and what we can do to help one another. It's, you know, part therapy. It's part summer camp. It's part boot camp. So
it's what we do as contractors at Connect. We, you know, there's the behind the scenes therapy sessions that we all go to. Yeah, that's right.
You can sit down and it's not the bricks of the meetings. Sometimes it's the stuff between the bricks that means the most, right? It's sitting down after a session with two or three people that maybe you don't know, or maybe you only see at Connect. You're not competitors because you're from different states. You just sit down and talk about what works and what doesn't work and the struggles you're having in recruiting employees or the frustrations that you're having with your local building officials, right? Those are the conversations that are meaningful and that you really learn a lot from. Well, we do that at Connect. I mean, we sit down and we talk about what's happening in our states and our local local associations. We talk about our relationship with the National Association, what we can do to improve that. I've always viewed sort of the federation or however you want to sort of cage the relationship we have at National as a little bit like a symphony, right? I mean, everybody should be singing off of the same music. We should have the same music, but we have different roles. Mm. So there's the percussion and there's the woodwind section and there's the string section, and it doesn't work when the string section tries to tell the percussion section how to do their job, right? We need to work on doing our jobs as the best way we can and figure out a way for the locals and the states and the national associations and our volunteer and professional leadership to make sure that we all have, whether it's the five-year plan or whether it's membership or whatever it is, we got to make sure it's the same sheet music. And then we need to make sure that we're taking care of what we do really, really well, and then figure out ways that when we're playing that music, that we're playing it at the same time and in the same way. Because that's sort of how you get a beautiful piece of music to listen to, right?
Well, I like that. I like that, Daryl. Wow. Yeah.
And that comes from somebody that can't even clap his hands in rhythm, right? I am not musically inclined at all.
I'm glad I didn't have to sing on that at that event. So yeah, you know, that's interesting, because I do think that's really a lot of what, you know, Connect we talked about was coming out of the pandemic, opening up the communication, and really the reason I wanted to try to get this podcast moving for PHCC, because I think we're stuck a little bit, in how we communicate, and we don't know what to do. And I think this is just an avenue of trying to open up some of that communication and go to people where they are. You know, I think that's always a difficult thing. It's state by state and even local by local. And you know, and it is inverted. I believe that, you know, the most important people are the local. Everything happens locally and everything happens at the state and then at national, not the other way around. And so just, I think you're dead on that. I love the symphony idea. Maybe we can expand on that some. I like that.
Well, both the best part and the worst part of the National Association is that we need each other.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true. We can't survive without each other.
We have resources that states and locals have no idea on, but then the states and the locals know what they need. And so we got to mesh all that together. And I, you know, being on the same page in a symphony is a great way to visualize that. That's great. Well,
and I'll give you a perfect example of that if I could, right? So at the state level, we talked earlier on, I've got six clients that I lobby on behalf of. I am not an expert in the plumbing and HVAC industry, right? I'm a generalist.
Sure.
When we went into this pandemic and all of a sudden our health department was coming up with all of these rules on HVAC systems and what has to happen to keep everything clean inside of businesses and government agencies and schools, all of a sudden we were expert testimony on what needs to be done, how often filters need to be changed, what kind of, I didn't know, I just don't have that. I can't do that. Chuck White was just, thank God for Chuck White.
Yeah, by the way, every time we say Chuck White's name, I demand that we clap. So that
and Mark Valentini too.
Oh, right? Yeah. I mean, well, not we don't clap for Mark as much, but anyway, that's another story.
But I would send, and I know other state execs too. I would send a 25-page draft rule that was so thick with technical language that I couldn't even get through the first page. I email it to Chuck and say help, and in 24 hours, 48 hours, I get talking points. This is where they're wrong. This is what needs to happen. This can't be done. We just don't, you know, and then I put my name on it and send it to the state regulators, and they comment about how helpful PHCC was in developing the rules that they had for the state of Oregon when it came to the pandemic. And there's no way I could have done that without the National Association.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the key points. I'm glad you made it like that, because, We are the experts, and we need to be able to expand that out and then become that resource for our legislative groups. And then what happens after something's passed or being discussed and on the regulatory side. But we can't do it as contractors. That's not our expertise on how to weave through all that. So that process that National has and those resources are invaluable with that staff. And we need to expand that conversation. If the AEC at every level with all of your execs can talk about that and make sure because I'm not sure to this day that our local contractors and state contractors really know that. The presidents and the boards, they end up seeing a lot of it, but the more we can get that word out, I think that's a massive benefit. You know, we always talk about benefits, but what in the world would be happening to our industry if we didn't have that kind of level of success and detail at the national level? Even COVID, you know, this COVID thing, Chuck and Mark put out, National put out to help us through the COVID, knowing what to do and the information coming out was amazing. So yeah,
it was everything from, talking at the state and local level when they were coming in and nobody has done this before. Right. So I'm not blaming the state regulators and trying to figure out what to do, but when we had conversations, at least in Oregon, on whether we could send two people in a truck to do work, or did we have to send everybody had to drive in their own vehicles and sort of being the voice of not only business generally, but our industry and specifically in saying, you know, we can't keep 6 feet of separation when we're working a job. We're going to be right next to each other. So let's figure out a way to protect our employees and protect our customers. But they still have to have clean water, right? They still need to turn the handle and something needs to come out, because we're working in hospitals. We're working in places that can't close down.
Right.
And so we were vital to our members, both nationally and state and local levels, in ways that I don't think that they'll ever understand. And because, I mean, it goes back to the beginning, politics is not a subject that you talk about in polite company, but it is the most, in my opinion anyway, and I'm a lobbyist, it's the most important thing we do. And we do it for our members in a way that it's difficult to get them to understand sort of the value that brings. But we could not survive as an industry without it.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, elections matter. And then the hidden repercussions of maybe not lobbying or not being involved, what does that do to your business compared to what happens to your business and our members and the country if we are doing it? So, I mean, a lot of times not doing things turns into worse, and we just don't even know it, that we could have had a major influence with our information or our views. And I think, you know, being involved is how you stay in business and make sure that the future is brighter. And so I think that's a massive benefit for PHCC National. And I thought with what you do, we may get into that a little bit.
And I get in a little bit of trouble, but I tell all of my clients that if they don't know who their state legislators are, if they don't know who their state assemblyman and they don't know who their state senator, that's a bad business practice.
Sure it is.
But it's one step further than that. If their state assemblyman and their state senator don't know who they are, if they think plumber, if they see legislation or regulation that has to do with the plumbing or HVAC industry, if they don't immediately think of somebody's name.
That's right. Not a group, but a name, a person. It needs to be personal. Yeah.
Absolutely. They need to have that personal contact with their legislator because that's how you get things done. Yeah. They need to have that expert in mind. Yeah. And if it's not a PHCC member, then we're not being good business people.
That's right.
That government is part of what we do. And so if we don't have that kind of relationship with our regulators where they know who we are, that's just a bad business practice.
Yeah, I agree. I'm thrilled that we got into that. Okay. I promised you that when you and I were talking too long about something, I was going to move us along. So we're moving along, but perfect. That is the danger with you and I can tell that already. You know, you mentioned, our strategic plan, and I'm really excited that we get to redo it this year coming out of the pandemic. And so AEC's views on what we need to do is extremely important to the association and me, especially, and then the staff and our board. Give me some thoughts on, you know, maybe one or two things that you at a high level you think we should be focused on. You know,
well, one of them we already talked about, which is the notion of how can we work better in growing membership. The National Association has a reach that the locals don't have in terms of you know, communicating through social media and sort of generating interest in contacting our potential members. Okay. and showing them the value we have. I just think that there's got to be ways beyond just the states doing it that we can grow. And in the states, I mean, we're membership growth benefits us the same way it benefits you. So I'm not saying we don't want to do it. I think we're looking for a stronger partnership. Along the same lines, one of the things that I hope to have a conversation with about sort of how national and local associations interact is there are national partners that we have in the plumbing industry. In Oregon, we call them state associate members. Some of them call them partners. There are different things that we have for the businesses that support the plumbing and HVAC industry. And they pay dues to us at the state level, but they have no contact from national at all, right? They don't get anything from national. So one of the things I hope to have is a conversation about maybe some ways that we can take our state affiliated members, our state associate members, and look for ways that they can benefit from that state association at the national level. Okay. Even if it's as simple as getting their emails on a couple of email lists so that they're getting emails from national so that they see that value, because Consolidated Supply that works in Oregon and Washington and I think Idaho, they're one of our biggest sponsors at our golf tournament, right? They're really important. They give us a lot of money. But they don't have any connection at national at all. And I think we can grow that
really good idea.
Yeah. Figuring out a way to get them something, not a lot, you know, and nothing expensive. I assume that adding a couple of more email addresses to a distribution list is not a heavy lift, but then they start getting more value.
Well, and I know I think state by state, there's some issues where, you know, individuals we're hitting some of our partners up 27 times across the country maybe, and we need to figure out how to partner better on that too, because I think we probably beat them up some and don't even know it, and maybe have different goals. Yeah, so I think any of that kind of communication. Okay, we'll definitely get on to that and get involved in that. And I made a note, so I really like that, and that's part of that symphony, right? So the other, you know, coming out of Connect, one of the things I was most excited about was John Gordon and you know, his keynote address. And you know, I'm a huge John Gordon fan and have been for a while. So I really enjoyed it, but really the focus on positive leadership. And, you know, I had somebody the other day say, well, do you not think we have positive leadership? And I said, oh, no, it's not that at all. But really this is tied for me coming out of the pandemic that, you know, we're working harder in my business on things that don't have anything to do with my business, in my opinion, and it's everything happening to everybody around us. And so just, you know, can you talk about some opportunities you see with AEC and national to you know, maybe ways we can stay focused on that throughout the year? Because that's really what I think we're trying to do, you know?
Well, I think this will come into focus during the sort of the 5-year plan discussion, and we've touched a little bit on this during the conversation, but I think, and this goes into membership growth, we've got a great story to tell.
Tell the story.
And that story is we're essential workers. We offer family wage jobs. In an apprenticeship program, you essentially get paid to go to school. There are just so many things about what we do. We talked about Micro, we talked about American Plumbing Stories. We need to just take all of these sort of little strings that seem to be out there that individually are having an impact. And if we can weave those together into a coherent story with a national strategy, I think we have the opportunity for just, you know, explosive growth, not only among our members for their, you know, everybody's looking for employees, right? We need, I've got one contractor, I won't say who it is, because I haven't asked for their permission, but they're turning down 150 calls a month.
Yeah.
Oh, because they don't have enough service techs. And maybe that's a low number. When I heard that number, I was.
Well, no, that's away. An astounding number, depending on what size of the business is. But now, like our company has.
They're turning their over to look.
I heard that.
For other competitors to say, can you help this person? Because I just don't have the people to do it.
Well, that was a consistent message.
We've got trucks that are idle. Come work for us. Right. And we've got to, you know, and being positive is, it's a mindset, right? Yeah. I drilled into my kids' heads from the time that they were very, very young that everybody's got two lists in their life. You've got a list of good things, and you've got a list of bad things, right? The list of good things will always be longer, and the list of bad things is always easier to remember. And so the focus has to be on where you spend your time, right? If you spend your time thinking about and working on that list of good things, the list of bad things will always be there, right? But it just, you got to focus on the right list.
Well, that really ties into the Gordon whole leadership, and you get to decide every day. You're hearing his story, talking about stories, but you're right. Sure. Us expanding these positive stories is what this has been. And I think this is our opportunity to, if we really will tell that consistent story, so we'll definitely work on that. That we can be the difference maker. That's how the state and locals and the National Association can be the difference maker for our members and attract more people to that kind of thought process. And so that's exciting. So listen, I want to switch gears. In the middle of this thing, I like to get off track a little bit. And so tell me
you
something.
You had a track to begin with?
No, but that sounds good. It sounds good when we started. Tell us something that nobody knows about you that is interesting. Tell us something.
Oh, I don't know that nobody knows about me. I mean, my life's an open book.
Okay, that's enough.
I own golf clubs, but I'm really bad at golf. I don't know that. I think people probably already know that. My career is in some ways an accident. So not a lot of people know this. When I was, I intended to go into the military and have a career in the military. I was nominated to attend the Air Force Academy, and I was ready to go. But what a lot of people don't know, just because it happened so long ago, I was in an accident my senior year of high school during Christmas break. It's not a really exciting accident. I slipped and fell on the ice. And as a result of that, I was in the hospital for a month, and I was out of school for 3 months, had emergency surgery. And the military after that said, we don't want you anymore. So I found out in July that the military wasn't going to pay for my schooling. And I had to find a place to go and figure out how to pay for it. And so I went from a military career into a liberal arts college. I said, Willamette University, right across the street from the Capitol building. I was a computer science major for 2 weeks. And college calculus convinced me that I was a political science major.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So that journey, like we talked about, is always changing. I mean, that's a great story. Now, and so the second question on that, especially now that we know that, is if you go back to your 20-year-old self, what advice would you give yourself? And
Don't slip and fall on the ice. Maybe the other one would have been become a plumber instead of going to a small liberal arts college and getting a degree in political science. I mean, it was expensive even back then. Yeah. But I mean, I'm a perfect example for the conversation we have, that the notion that I wouldn't go to college was never, and I'm the first person in my family to go to college, right? I'm one of those first generation college students. My dad was a Teamster and worked in timber mills and warehouses his whole life. And it was all about getting me to college. Yeah. And there was no conversation about, are there other things I might be interested in doing? I was not exposed to those as even options. Yeah. Right. And I may still have chosen college, but we've got, you know, our biggest challenge is making sure that we're an option.
That's right. Oh, yeah. You better believe it. But, you know, that generation, my parents' generation, your parents' generation, their whole focus was to make sure you had the opportunity to have a better life. And their thought process at the time was, well, you go to college, that's the path to get a better life. And it turned out at the time it probably was in a lot of cases. But that whole thing has changed with the cost and the reality of jobs now. And so, yeah, it's a different opportunity now. Yeah.
Well, and back then, it wasn't that that was a choice. It was the choice.
Oh, I
agree. Right? And what we need to talk about is it's a choice.
Yeah, I agree.
But there are so many other opportunities. I look now, people I graduated from high school with that went into the trades that now own auto repair shops and own different kinds of businesses where they didn't go to college.
Yeah.
Right? They were buying boats when I was making college loan payments. Yeah. Right. Yeah. They were so far ahead of me in achieving the American dream.
Sure.
Right. And I've achieved it. I love what I do. Don't misunderstand that. Right. But they were 10 to 15 years ahead of me in achieving sort of measures that we look at for success, owning homes, owning, you know, doing things, going on nice vacations. They were there way ahead of me because I had to make student loan payments and they didn't.
Sure. Well, and that path is getting a lot clearer for parents, I think, especially to see it. You know, we're not pushing our kids to do things that as much now like that as we used to. And PHCC our industry is a great way for them to accomplish more quicker and have a career path where they can really do anything they want to do in that career. So it's really interesting. Okay. I wanted to go into a couple other things. Thanks for that feedback. That personal feedback, I think, is really a part of our story that we can all relate to. And so, yeah, thanks so much for that. I know that the success of the state associations is how we win at national. It's that simple for me. And so we're going to focus on that. Well, the first question I got on that is, as the new AEC president, who is your favorite state exec?
Oh, well.
Don't answer that question. I'm just kidding.
Other than myself?
Oh, there we go. Okay, now that's not going to cause any problems. But, you know, all kidding aside, you know, as a state exec, you know, I know we've talked about it a little bit. What programs, though, in national do you think have helped you win the most in Oregon?
Well, we actually talked about that a little bit. It's the resources as a state exec that I have at national through Chuck and through Mark and through other people to say, you know, this is what's happening in Oregon. It's above my pay grade, right? I don't understand the technical part, whether it's apprenticeship issues, one-to-one ratios for apprenticeships to training. And there's a lot of those things that I'm an inch thick and a mile deep, right?
Sure.
A mile wide. And so I rely heavily on national staff and my fellow state execs, right, that understand these things. We do have execs, by the way, at the state and local level that came out of the trades, right? So they have a level of expertise that I don't have. At the same time, because my background is in government affairs, there are times that they can lean on me on how to deal with issues with regulators. And so, but I rely real heavily on national for that. The untold stories at national, and I think this is my problem as a state exec, is it's a little bit like my iPhone. I view the National Association a lot like I view my iPhone. I only use about 10% of its capacity because I don't know how to use the rest of it.
I think that's
there is
fair.
So much that's available at national, whether it's the educations that's available, trying to get our members to just understand all of the benefits that are available.
Yeah.
It's because everybody is going from event to event to event to event to event, and it's really, really hard to focus. And I think that
it's information overload. We all have that right now. I agree. Yeah.
We need to build a better partnership for telling our members what is available to them because they're in survival mode.
Yeah.
They have to worry about getting enough employees. They have to, and so.
Yeah, I know. I think we live in the world at National where we think our contractors have all this, they're going to spend all this time to go to the website and look and search and search. And maybe it may be more reasonable that if we make sure we're clearly finding what that 10 to 20% in Oregon you really need for your members, and then make sure you're clear on that. And then if we could do that all across the country, maybe that's a cleaner way to do it. Cause it's tough. I mean, it is, there's so much available. And I, even in my position, somebody will ask me a question and I go, I'll find out, oh yeah, we've been doing that for a while. And it's amazing, you know?
Well, and I think I guess I want to make the point that this is not a PHCC national problem. This is not a PHCC state problem. This is a association problem.
If
you talk to the home builders, if you talk to the car dealers, if you talk to any other association, and I talk to my colleagues in different industries and different associations all the time about the struggles that they're having, this isn't something that PHCC is struggling with because we're PHCC. This is the change in who our membership are. They're getting younger, right? And they want different things. They want it presented in different ways. One of my other clients is vehicle dealers. We still have vehicle dealers that want news sent to them by fax, right? We still have vehicle dealers out there whose employees print out their emails for them so they can read it, because they don't use that computer thing. There are those members are in all industries are sure. dying off, sure. right? But we still have to serve them. And then we have people that don't look at their computers. They look at everything on their smartphone,
yeah.
right? So if it isn't presented in a way that's visually appealing on a 3-inch by 4-inch screen, we're not going to connect with them. But that is everything that they do is on that 3-inch by 4-inch screen or on an iPad. And just the notion that they would have a PC or a laptop it makes us look old to some of those people. And they're our target audience. Yeah. And so it's extremely tough for us to communicate when there are so many channels, and we have an obligation to communicate with our members in the channels that they'll take the information.
Yeah, so go to them where they are. Make sure that we connect.
When there's 20 different ways to do it. Tough.
But then really make sure the state groups, the state leaders, the boards, and the executive directors really get connected on sharing that information in the format, because it's really through the states. So we have to win through the states. And so I love hearing that. And so any advice, I'm going to hold you to, you know, really this is about me being able to get you in a position where I'm going to make you promise some things. That's really why I didn't write these questions down. But anyway, just kidding. But, you know, we really got to dedicate that we're going to do those things that it takes to help each other communicate. And that's really, we're building relationships. The more relationships you build and the more communication you have, the more trust you build.
We all need to hire a bunch of 18 and 19 year olds to help us with social media is what we need to do.
That's right. We're doing. Yeah. And if you knew what it took for them to try to get me straightened out on this podcast, you'd be embarrassed. But anyway, that's another story. So listen, I appreciate all that feedback. And you know, really membership is a massive, you'd mentioned it a couple times, but please, you know, as you go forward with the AEC, know that we're really trying to focus on how to grow membership. And so any ideas, you know, things we can do better, you know, we'd love to hear them. And we need that from every state, not just one or two states that, you know, need something. So I'm really wanting to open up that conversation on membership, because it is different state by state. Any real quick thoughts on that?
Well, I'm a lobbyist. I talk for a living, so you're not gonna, you won't have to worry about pulling information from me when we meet. But what my responsibility is, just from my perspective, I am one voice among all of the state and local execs. I feel a tremendous responsibility over the course of the next year, when I represent my colleagues. I'm just going to spend a lot of time listening to them, so that when I get together at the national level as their eyes and their ears and their voice, that I'm speaking for them and not for Oregon, right? Oregon is a relatively small state. We're just a one cog in a pretty darn big wheel. And so my colleagues are going to get tired of getting emails from me asking questions. And I hope they get tired. I hope I get to the point where they say, stop bugging me.
Yeah, okay.
But my honest goal with my colleagues is to try to figure out not what each individual state needs, but what can we collectively say we need from the National Association, because it's not fair to you to try to respond to every state and local association. Like I said, I think there's 120 or 130 different local, state and local associations. And if we can't collectively come up with some things that we all need, then I will have failed.
Well, and I think we can put them into different buckets. I think, you know, there'll be, you know, I think there's 20, there's 30 some state chapters. You know, if we come up with seven or eight buckets that each one of them, you know, that they fit into on what they need, I think that's a clear way to get to some of the outcomes. You know, certain states need certain things on membership. The apprenticeship program is working tremendously well in some states, not in others. You know, and then your best practices, you talked about it, to me, is the avenue as contractors on how we really help each other. And I think it's the same thing with the AEC and the state associations and the locals, that the maybe the most powerful thing is you finding out what's working in Georgia that may translate to Oregon, and then what Brenda Dant's doing in Indiana that may translate, and vice versa, and then, or maybe tweaking it. So, yeah, okay, in this state it works, but to make that work here, we'd have to tweak it. Okay, well, let's tweak it. It's not you're not having to redo everything. And so I think that's really the big power I see with the Republic. And I've said it before. I think, you know, the association's really like our Republic. It's really working when the states are the testing ground, and help us win overall. And so I think that's really, you know, how we're set up. So listen, I think we've covered a lot. Is there any last thoughts maybe, or other things that we didn't cover that you'd like to bring up and talk about?
That's way too wide.
I did that on purpose.
We're going to be here for days and days if we do that. And this is already a pretty long half hour. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to working with you. I'm looking forward to working with Mark, with the other members of the board on, you know, how do we launch successfully out of the pandemic? What does that new normal look like for us? I think we owe it to our members to have a comprehensive and a coherent strategy that will grow membership and that will provide more value to our members. And that's not necessarily adding new things. That's maybe just letting them know what already exists, right? What we've already been doing for 10 years. It's exactly what you said.
It is
how do we tell that story at the state and the local level when we get, and by the way, membership growth is contractor to contractor. I mean, we talked about it at the state level, but it's not really even at the state level. It's contractors getting a hold of other contractors. It's the supply houses telling their customers that we have to have a strong voice at our state level and at the national level. And the way that we have a strong voice as an industry is if people are willing to say, and it's not even so much the money, right? I mean, obviously we survive based on money, but when I go to the legislature and say, I represent the plumbing, heating and cooling industry, and they say, how many members do you have? Yeah. We should be proud of that number, right? That number matters. And so it's getting people to say, yeah, I'm a part of PHCC because that there's strength in those numbers.
Yeah. Well, you know, you said too, something that, you know, really is important as contractors. We need to invite other contractors. We're really bad. I think sometimes we need to invite our friends that are in the business in our regions to join our state and locals and national, but you know, maybe we need to invite people that we're competitors with in a really strong way and cross that bridge. I know I got my start in PHCC because of my best friend who runs a plumbing company in Gastonia, Wes Stiers, saw how I was running. There's two stories. The truth is he saw how I was running my business and struggling, and he says, man, you got to come to this meeting, see Kirkhalter, because I'm afraid you're going to go bankrupt if you don't change. And, you know, he did it out of love. Yeah, but there was also a jab in there, and he was right, you know, and it just completely changed my future because of those that invitation. So we need to invite people to be more successful, and then that helps us also. And so that's a great point.
Well, and as an association exec, if I show up at a contractor, I'm selling them something.
Right.
If you show up, you're helping them.
Oh, yeah. Right? If somebody tried to sell me that from the state association, I would have been, okay, you're killing me. But, yeah, you're exactly right. So, yeah.
That's what, you know, Hunter. Yeah, we have a great association with Federated Insurance, right? Yep. They go out and tell our story.
They do.
That partnership is key, right? And we need to build that kind of relationship with whether it's national, but right, most plumbing products are sold by local vendors.
Every time.
Right? And so those are the ones that I talked about, sort of building a stronger relationship between local associate members and national so that we can have that you know, when we're selling those products, that maybe they're reminding those people that are customers that you need to join PHCC, that you need to come to this meeting. You need to understand what this group is doing, what they can do for you.
Well, you know, for a couple of years now, but especially last year, Hunter Botto's main, if you really got into any kind of conversation about membership with him, and he's right, he talked about it as contractor to contractor. And so your point on that, we have to be stronger on that. And, you know, he got a little bit sidetracked because of the pandemic, but I've heard him talk about it, and he's right. We later will go as contractors, what is the executive director doing? But it's really, it's got to be first contractor to contractor. That's a great point. So listen, Darryl, I really appreciate it. And all the practice we did coming into this thing actually paid off. And we're glad to, two talkers. It was a shocker that we actually got through this thing. And we'll have to cut it down from a 2-hour conversation had a great, really enjoyed it. And it's really good to get to know you. And I think our members and other, members of the AEC and people are really going to enjoy listening to your perspective, because it's really important as the leader of the AEC that you get that out there. And so we're excited about that and be glad to get it out. Now, I do a couple things at the end. I think it's important that leaders read, and I've been fortunate to read a lot. And so I like to do a book recommendation or a podcast. And today there's a great book, The Way of the Shepherd, by Dr. Kevin Lehman and William Pentak. And so I'm going to recommend, it's a leadership book, but it's really a story about a kid graduating from college, getting his graduate degree, and he accepts a job at this company, and he knows technically how to do what he's going to do, but he realizes that they've hired him as a manager to be over other people, and he's terrified. And this book takes him through a professor, through a series of just conversations and meetings, helps him, teaches him how to lead his flock and put the time in to build trust. And I think it really fits in with what we're trying to do. And I've read it, so it's a really easy read, obviously, but I think it's, there's some pictures, but anyway, I think being intentional about reading those kind of things. So I'm going to recommend The Way of the Shepherd, and hopefully you guys will enjoy that. You got any final comments, Darryl?
I'll just want real quick connect story to close up on, because we talked about the importance of people getting together. And I want to encourage everybody that watches this podcast, come to Connect next year. You'll build relationships that you can't do it any other way. I ended up going out to dinner with some contractors from Texas and Louisiana. Kansas City is known for its steaks. So we went out and we had some really, really good steaks. But being from Oregon and Louisiana and Texas, the only thing I think we were missing was an interpreter, and we could have really used one a couple
times.
That's
beautiful.
But that was, I learned so much, about, you know, two other states that I, you know, and I've visited both of them briefly, but it just was an opportunity. Like I said, it's that stuff in between the bricks that makes it so significant. And if you can get past the language barrier with people from Louisiana or Texas,
or
Hunter from New York, there's just a lot of really good information out there. Coming from Oregon, I don't have an accent. So
sure.
I don't
Sure. Yeah. Well, I don't either. Obviously, you know, from where I'm from, I don't either. All these other people, you know, I think it's interesting. PHCC does focus on what we have in common a lot more than the rest of the world seems to be doing. You know, we pick at each other a lot about our differences, but more and more and more I hear about us focusing on what we have in common. And there's so much that we have in common from a success standpoint. So I like to hear that. That's a great story. And I really appreciate you ending on that. So listen, Darryl, thanks so much. I do have a closing here that I'm going to get into, but listen, so thanks so much for the time to listen to today's episode. Please spread the word if you can about the podcast, and please don't hesitate to contact us here at podcast@phccrocks.com. We are always looking for suggestions for future podcast topics and guests. You can find the podcast and subscribe at the website phccrocks.com, and please follow us on our social media platforms. You can also find us and subscribe and rate the podcast. Please rate this one. This will be the best podcast we've ever had with an AEC president. And rate the podcast on most podcast services such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google. Thanks again to Darryl Fuller with the AEC and PHCC of Oregon for being our guest today. You were pretty awesome, weren't you?
I did all right.
Yeah, okay. PHCC Rocks is produced and brought to you by Amy Anderson and Elizabeth King from GSM Services and Charlotte Parham of PHCC National, edited by PHCC National. I'm your host, Joel Long. Thanks again for hanging out with us, and please keep coming back to hear more reasons why PHCC Rocks.